Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. Every Monday morning at our treatment center, Ashley, in Havre de Grace, Maryland, we have a very lovely graduation ceremony for those who are leaving within the week. I usually make some comments. Each graduate is asked to come up and say a few words, whatever he feels, and whatever family members or friends are there are also asked to come up. But what I would like to do is to share with you some of the thoughts and notions that I share with our graduates, because they may be of help to you. I've been doing it for a little over 5 years now, and all I try to do is just offer a few hints about what has happened to them there and what we hope they will do and what they will do will result in when they go back home. And so I've entitled this little thing this evening, Going Home. The word graduation comes from a Latin word, gradus, which means a step. And we usually go through life step by step or gradually. So a graduation is just that. It is a step. And every step that we take implies from to. So a lot of people only give half of that. They say, well, I don't like the word graduation. I would prefer commencement, the beginning of a new life. Well, it is the beginning of a new life, but it comes from something. One of the major steps that you took was coming from addiction into treatment for it. And you came loaded with fear. Even under the best of circumstances, anything new is always fearsome, and it causes us to be apprehensive and anxious. But the fear of going into treatment, what's it going to be like? Are they going to make me quit altogether for the rest of my life? I just can't envision living without drinking or drugging. Are they going to make me make any promises? And in my own case at Ashley, are they going to make me join a religious community? Am I going to have to take vows? All of these goofy fears, because the fears in the soul of an alcoholic are always irrational. They're the goofy fears that you lived with. Fear of the phone. Fear of mail. Fear of authority of any kind. What are they going to say to me now? What have they got on me? All of these fears. And I think that you have experienced, as you came into treatment, something brand new if it's your first time. You hear no blame. You hear no guilt. You are told the nightmare is all over. Just let good things happen to you because you're worthy of it. You learned one of the most beautiful things you can ever learn about yourself and this disease in one line. You learned that you were sick, not evil. You also learned that there's nothing to be ashamed of because you're sick. And you learned to draw a distinction. The disease is not immoral, even though the subsequent behavior was, and created all that guilt in you which made you hate yourself. And yet you weren't blamed. Nobody ever tried to put a guilt trip or a shame trip on you. And you began to learn about your disease. But the beauty of it is, you learned it in the company of others who are in the same canoe you are. And after a day or two or three, you begin to blend into the community. And you begin to feel at ease being there. And as you went through group therapy and all the educational sections, the films, the tapes, the lectures, the one-on-ones with your counselor who helped to open you up and bring out all this hidden pain in order that you might resolve it. And imperceptibly, as you went day by day getting weller and weller and better, you found yourself smiling. You found yourself becoming genuinely interested in the pain of others. You found out that group is a pool of compassion in which you found it and you willingly gave it. And almost in the blinking of an eye, you're now about to take another step. You're about to leave. And this provides people like me with great comfort and tremendous happiness, is watching you go home different from when you came. Ladies and gentlemen, you are not the same person who came. Oh, you're wearing the same body. It is impossible to be touched by God without change. We hope it is a change for the better. It may be, frighteningly enough, a change for the worse. But you're not the same. You're better or you're worse. As you leave, I would sincerely hope that you leave also afraid, but different from the fear that you brought with you. I hope that's gone. The irrational fears that come with addiction should disappear if you begin to get well right. What fears do you leave with? A fear of your own weakness. And I hope to God, a fear of alcohol. I once heard an alcoholic say, I do not go along with the saying, I don't fear alcohol, I respect it. He said, I hope to God that I go to my grave with the fear that a drink will kill me, because only God knows what I'll try to do if I ever lose that fear. Ladies and gentlemen, don't ever lose the notion that there are good fears as well as bad. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of the wisdom that you pray for in the Serenity Prayer. Any human being who does not fear flood or fire or earthquake has got to be crazy. Many people can handle alcohol. Alcoholics can't. The alcoholic must preserve a rational, saving, salutary fear of that which might kill him if he ever loses that fear and tries to play around with it. We in treatment have given you the best that is in us. That's why we're in it. That's why we're in it. To try to present the beauty of the sober life to you so that you might learn to love it enough to desire it. And when all is said and done, and when all the brilliant programs and all the secondary programs that are meant to enhance your sobriety, when all is said and done, the only thing you pick up in a lecture hall is intellectual data. You may know thyself and die drunk. Self-knowledge is not much of a tool unless I use it. Ladies and gentlemen, do you know what your sobriety hinges on? Your desire to not drink has to be stronger than your desire to drink. When all is said and done, that's what it comes down to. And if you don't have that desire, you better pray for it. Just ask for it. What will ensure sobriety? Absolute commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the primary therapy for this disease, in spite of everything else that has been discovered since. This is a truly scientific therapy geared to save your life. It comes from pure laboratory technique, which makes it the most scientific of all therapies. These two men weren't out to write a theoretical handbook of spirituality. They were out to survive. So they accepted everything offered and kept what worked. And they came up with 12 principles that can be summarized in 6 words. Trust God, steps 1, 2, and 3. clean house, steps 4 through 11, help others, step 12. Now, Bill Wilson, who started this whole thing, had to begin with step 12 in order to discover the first 11. Alcoholics have to work through the first 11 in order to be qualified to 12th step or pass it on. This way of life is the therapy for alcoholism. And it is a way of life. What do you mean you must be committed to it? What do you mean by commitment? Everybody tosses that word around. There's a wonderful story that illustrates what commitment is by contrasting it with contribution. What's the difference between commitment and contribution? There's a little story that illustrates it perfectly. A pig and a chicken were walking down a highway, and they came to a sign advertising a restaurant. And on the billboard was a picture of a breakfast, ham and eggs and biscuits. And that old pig punched the chicken. He said, "Now yours is a contribution. Mine is total commitment." You give your life to it. Why? Your life depends on it. You do not have to like AA. You just have to be there. And the mark of an adult is someone who does what needs to be done. And emotion has no part of it. Didn't you learn about yourself that when you were drinking or drugging, you were characterized by self-will run riot? Well, intellect is back now, we hope, getting in charge. It's meant to be used. And an adult does what ought to be done simply because it ought to be done. And so you go to AA, whether you like it or not. And after a while, if you are open-minded and bring with you the attitude that you should bring, you will grow to like it. Always remember this. Somebody was there when you came. You be there when somebody else comes. And so, like most treatment centers, we recommend your first 90 days, 90 meetings, one a day. Why? To submerge yourself in it. There's a wonderful old saying, you don't get AA, it gets you. But you have to be there for it to get you. In the initial stages of recovery from anything, more rather than less therapy is called for. That's why they say bathe yourself in it for those first months. And then you maintain a happy, effective, and productive sobriety two or three times a week for comfortable sobriety. Develop your own gimmicks for staying sober. I know a man who simply pictures a skull and crossbones on any bottle or any container that has alcohol in it. As he says, "You may be able to drink it, but I can't. For you, it is pleasure. For me, it is poison." I know a fellow who has been sober a long, long time, and he says, "One of the main things that keeps me sober is the thought of how I would drink if I went back to drinking. And it wouldn't be normal. It just wouldn't be normal." Get your own gimmicks for staying sober. What are the precautions you take? You go to meetings at your home group and others. Home group is important. You work the steps. You express your gratitude for your sobriety. And you pray for it. I know a fellow who always says, every time he speaks in AA, says, "You know, when I first came to this program, they told me if I said my prayers, went to meetings, and didn't take a drink, I could stay sober." He said, "That's worked for me for 28 years. I believe I'll try it again tomorrow." So simple. So simple. There's no magic to staying sober. The clue, don't drink. You don't need a PhD to grab that. Don't drink. What else do you do? From a negative point of view, you stay away from people, places, and things that may be the occasion of your having a relapse or a slip. As they say in AA, you don't want to have a slip. Stay away from slippery people, places, and things. I think you're going to hear this. Well, if anybody stands in the way of your sobriety, get rid of them. Oh, your husband's a threat to your sobriety? Divorce him. Don't follow unsolicited advice. Beware of people who want to make decisions for a family that they don't know. Besides, please, in the name of heavens, remember this. Your sobriety is your business. If you have the support of family, wonderful. But you have to get sober whether you have their support or not. Just like family members have to get a handle on their own emotional, spiritual, and mental stability, whether you get sober or not. Those people aren't responsible for my sobriety. I heard a man say that in so many words. Those people are not responsible for my sobriety. I am. Well, what if you're ill at ease with alcohol around you? Get rid of it. But supposing there are members of my family who drink it, that's one of the facts of life in your life. I know many people who live in the entertainment, you know, back and forth. You have to entertain people and be entertained 2, 3, 4, 5 nights a week. So be it. That's your life. You have to get handle enough on your own sobriety to be able to take and accept anything. Now, obviously, you don't seek those things. But if you have to be around it, it is you who have to take the tools that we've presented to you in treatment in order to maintain the sober life. You get nothing for nothing and precious little for 2 cents. If it's worth it, it's got a price tag on it, whatever it is. And being willing to pay the price will let us know that there is fact behind the gratitude that you say you have. Now, what do you do in the outside world about your friends? How? All kinds of apprehensions about going home. Well, what are my friends going to think? Accept this as infallible truth simply because it is. It's based on the experience of anyone who has ever entered the realm of the sober life. Your true friends will be absolutely thrilled that you're not drinking, that you're not an embarrassment to them anymore, that you're not somebody who has to be excused, you're not somebody that has to be lied for, and you're not making a jackass of yourself anymore. They'll be thrilled. The others, your sobriety will be an indictment of their drinking. And face it, who did you drink with? Didn't you drink with people that drank the way you did so you could feel comfortable with them? Many of your drinking buddies are alcoholics. They drank the way you did. You don't have to worry about them. They'll drop you. What do you do when somebody offers you a drink? Well, there are all kinds of ways to turn it down. The easiest, I always say, if you're writing, jot this down. You say, no, thank you. What else? What would you do if somebody offered you a shot of arsenic? Wouldn't you turn it down? Why is it that alcoholics think that everybody is zeroing in on and concerned about them? If it's a true drinker, that's okay, Charlie. Don't go their way and get another one for themselves. If you're really worried at a party, get a glass of ginger ale and hold it in your hand all night. Or you could try the cute answers. Would you care for a drink? I would care for about 52 drinks, but I have to be in Albuquerque in July. They won't understand that, but so what? You could be kind of smart alecky. Why aren't you drinking? Well, when I do, I usually vomit all over the person beside me. Or, if you want to make absolutely certain that you will not be asked a second time, say this. Would you care for a drink? Just, no thanks, but I'll take the money. They will not come back. They won't come back. If you want to have a real picnic, try that, and it'll also make a commitment. It'll make a commitment because you've said it. Would you care for a drink? No, thanks. Don't you drink? No. Why? Well, I don't drink because I'm an alcoholic. They've never seen a live one before. You've got them. They'll stand there for the rest of the night with a drink in their hand. Hey, you got them hypnotized. Don't worry about it. Just turn them down. Just turn them down. You leave here away from the warmth of the womb of treatment. This is treatment. You go out into the world of AA in which you're going to have to spend the rest of your life. Here, counselors are available. It's 24 hours a day, all of this. You have a group that you can go to. You have an entire community, all of whom are in the same boat. Now you're going back to the old job. I had a fellow say to me very recently, the day after he came home from treatment, he went to work, and on his locker were all kinds of smart alecky, nasty remarks. And he said, I don't know how to deal with that. He's fresh out of treatment. And I said, just walk tall. Only people who are fearful of sobriety knock it. You're going out there. Like, I remember in the old days watching in a newsreel airplanes taking off of carrier ships. And as they zoomed off the deck, there was that slight dip before they got airborne. We've given you the tools. If you use them, you'll get airborne. You don't get AA, it gets you. Just let yourself be gotten. You go with our love and our prayers. You make our life worth living. But always be on guard against the unguarded moment. If you want to be humble about your sobriety and realize how fragile it can be, listen to those words from your founder. Be on guard against the unguarded moment, because there will come times in your life when nothing stands between you and a drink except all those past AA meetings that will make you just run. If you fight it, you lose. Just run. But never, never, never forget the slogan that Bill Wilson gave you as the ideal to reach for. The good is too often the enemy of the best. There are all kinds of sobriety. There are all kinds of depths of wellness. Just as we say, some are sicker than others, some are weller than others. You can settle for what is good, but once you've settled, you've settled. And even though it's good, the good stands as a barrier towards your going higher. The good is too often the enemy of the best. And that's the slogan that we operate under and try to hold up as an ideal for our graduates. And we always remind them that gratitude is the hinge on which the sober life swings. You can do a whole lot of things against the rules and stay sober, but I do not believe that you can be an ingrate and retain your sobriety. What is gratitude? It's the 12th step. It's the golden tray on which you offer to others what God has given you. A man once wrote to his sponsor, thanking him for the gift of sobriety. And this was his reply, and this is our statement to our graduates. We thank God for the role that we were privileged to play, however slight, in your own magnificent rediscovery of self. It's the most beautiful definition of sobriety I have ever heard, and I wish you a long, long life of sobriety. Congratulations on your graduation, and good night.